Our next speaker is Adam O'Toole, and as soon as his presentation is loaded, we'll figure out what he's going to talk about. He's going to talk about miscanthus biochar under field conditions and ecotoxicological evaluations. Go ahead, Adam.
Thanks for that. My name's Adam O'Toole. Currently working in Norway, which is a long way from here. So I just thought I'd say a few things about Norway before I move on, because I didn't know a lot about it before I moved there myself from Australia 6 years ago. So Norway, an oil-rich country, makes a lot of money from oil in the North Sea, famous for cross-country skiing, and but also it has a very strong environmental focus. So even though they're a contributor to, I guess, fossil fuel emissions in the world because of its oil production, also have a conscience about that on the environmental side, and they're the world's largest financial sponsor of rainforest protection in Brazil and Africa and Southern Asia. And also they have an ambitious project called the Norwegian Moon Landing Project, I guess the equivalent of the Norwegian Moon Landing, and that's in creating a carbon capture and storage facility beside one of their oil refineries. So in that respect, it gives a bit of a background to what we're interested in biochar in Norway in terms of carbon storage and carbon stability. We've done some initial estimates to say that biochar in soil for carbon sequestration would be a cheaper option per tonne than CCS. Of course, they're very, very rough calculations, but given the amount of money being put into CCS, it's worth having a look at that, of whether we could do something with biological carbon capture and storage. So as we know, converting biomass into biochar stabilizes it, and this is what's making it attractive for carbon sequestration. This picture here is the actual biochar we've been used in the field trial, miscanthus biochar. You can see the particle size there. That's not the original biomass, of course. That's wheat straw. So we could look at biochar as a solution for carbon sequestration, but there's a couple of pre-criteria to that. One of that is that it is in fact stable, and we've had lots of presentations so far to suggest that it is. But we also need to look at the total carbon net budget for the system, the native carbon, and the life cycle analysis for the use of that carbon. And we also need to make sure that it doesn't pose a risk to the soil system, and that it at least maintains current plant production yields. We certainly don't want to go down in yields if we're to apply a biochar only for carbon sequestration. Norway's very rich soils, relatively young soils after the last ice age. So the agronomic potential is not the most interesting thing, because I think we're only going to get marginal benefits, especially in comparison to other things that we add to the soil, like biosolids, which are a legal amendment in Norway and which are applied in most farms. So biochar has to perform above and beyond something which farmers are already getting for free, and even sometimes in the winter they're getting paid to take it. So because, you know, people don't stop going to the toilet and you've got to keep getting rid of it. So even in the wintertime. So they pay the farmers to at least store it for the next season. So the purpose of our study, which was a field trial, was to estimate the stability of biochar carbon and the effects of biochar on native soil C, and some lab trials using the same biochar on worms on the Acinetophyta species. And as we heard in the previous talk, one of the methods you can do to track the stability of carbon in a system is to add a different carbon isotopic ratioed biomass to a different system. So for in this case, in temperate regions, C3 biomass dominates, which has a different delta 13C signal to C4 plants, which, for example, is miscanthus, which we've used in this case. So keep in mind two figures. This is minus 15 per miller and minus 30 for the field system, the soil. We conducted looking at the stability of the carbon. We're doing carbon flux, and we're also measuring the isotopic ratio with a Picaro gas analyzer, and we're using the Keeling plot method used to isolate soil respired CO2 in the chamber measurements from the atmospheric. And for the ecotox on the worms, we're doing reproduction tests, looking at the amount of cocoons produced, counting the juveniles, and also avoidance tests. Yeah. A little bit on the biochar itself. Miscanthus produced by Pyreg GmbH in Germany. Pyrolysis temperature 650 to 750. They couldn't give us really accurate figures on the temperature, so that was as good as we could get. But this machine is primarily for biochar production, so it's one of the first ones in Europe just for producing research amounts for universities such as ourselves. Fixed C of 70%, volatile of 7, ash 23%, quite a high ash content in the miscanthus, a lot of silica. Small amounts of nitrogen. You've got the P and the K there, pH of 10, relatively large surface area there, measured as BET, 349 square metres per gram, and the soil is an inceptisol, a sandy clay loam, 2.5% carbon. Field trials plan to go for 3 years. We applied the char in the autumn of 2010, inverse ploughed. So the biochar was spread on the surface and then it was inverted, as normally practiced in that area, which means that the biochar is somewhat buried around 15 centimetres under the soil profile. You can't see the biochar on the surface. You have to take soil samples to find it. I think this has some interesting ramifications for what's happening in the soil. It wasn't planned to do inverted plough, but listening to the other talks about what biochar is doing, I think it can have some interesting effects to compare inverse ploughed versus its more rotary disking in the top layer. This year we used oats, next year it'll be barley, and there's our fertilizer rate. We've got 16 plots with 4 treatments, 4 reps. We're using 8 tonnes carbon per hectare miscanthus biochar, and we have a control with the original biomass at the same amount, 8 tonnes carbon of the original miscanthus. Of course, a control with no amendments. And then, because this is looking at carbon sequestration, we're seeing, let's amp it up a bit, 3 times the amount of this one, approximately. How much biochar could we put into this system, and will that negatively affect yield? And using a randomised block design there. So looking at soil respiration between May and September of this year, this is once a week measurements. I have to admit with this study that we probably need more measurements, especially on the isotopic measurements, so keep that in mind when there's very rough estimates this year, and next year we're going to take more comprehensive measurements. We didn't see any significant difference between treatments. Of course, in some peaks, this is a warm day where you've got higher peaks, and you've got rainy, cold days here where you've got more water in the soil. So one of the things with soil respiration experiments is you should try to get out in the field no matter what the weather is. Don't just go out there when it's nice and sunny and have a lovely day. Try to get a mix. And also when you take the measurements, according to what I've read in the literature, the timing of when you go out seems to be some magical figure between about 9 and 11 o'clock in the morning. Seems to be a if you take it then, they say it's representative of average daily soil respiration. So if you don't want to go four times a day and 12 o'clock at night, that's sort of a shortcut. So in total, if you average that over the season, there was actually more respiration from the control plots. Number two was the raw miscanthus. Number three was the 8 tonnes of biochar, BC8. And the last one was BC25. So even though there was nothing significant there, you see the slight suppressive effect from the biochar treatments on soil respiration. Just converting that into cumulative carbon loss, you've got the control and these four going down here. Looking at the isotopic signal coming from this, keeping in mind we had around minus 30 for the soil, so we have 29.8 for the control, 29.6 for the biochar 8, 29.4, so it's very similar to the control as the biochar, and a little bit less for the miscanthus, which I'll show you what that converts into. So if you consider that this black here is what's coming, is the carbon evolving from the added C4 products, whether it be the biochar or the raw miscanthus, compared to the control here is the respiration. So you have 1% approximately of the respiration coming from the biochar, 3% here with the 25 tonnes, and with the raw miscanthus you've got about a 20% contribution to the overall overall carbon loss. Now just moving on to what it did to yields, there wasn't any significant difference between treatments, although in terms of the grain yield, the highest biochar came out on top by a bit. There's nothing visual you can see in the field, but when you measure it you get small differences. In the straw yield, there was a small difference in the, no significance, but there was a small difference in the miscanthus itself, which could be due to a nitrogen immobilisation, we assume. And so pulling all these figures together, if you're to make an evaluation if you had to make a decision about after only 1 year what biochar is doing in the system, you would say that it's not increasing respiration and the biochar itself is quite stable and it's not negatively affecting yields. In fact, it's slightly increasing them by a little bit. So we could say that it's quite positive in that respect if you're using it for carbon sequestration without wanting to have any detriment to the system. Of course, moving on to soil health, just one slide left here. We have reproduction rate, number of juveniles after 8 weeks in an incubation. And the biochar had slightly higher reproduction rates compared to the control, and also there was no difference in survival rates and weight loss, which was also measured in the worms, and there will be some data made available on the PLFA bacteria measurements in the gut of this particular species. Don't ask me to say that one. And this is just the last slide in terms of looking at heavy metal content. This is a requirement in Norwegian agriculture that soil amendments are under specific limits, and the biochar, this is the limits here for all the different heavy metals in blue, so you can't have any more of that. That's for the A class. That's if it's under this limit, it means you can put as much as you want on the field as long as it doesn't affect plant health. And it was well under the limits in all those cases. So tick, tick, tick for heavy metals, tick for the worms, and so far after 1 year it didn't affect yields or soil respiration, but we have to keep in mind that it was the worst year for grain yields in Norway in 30 years, had a lot of rain, a lot of areas were swamped, so as with field trials, you need several years, and that's one of the limitations. We've seen a lot of lab work here today, and you always get the criticism that yes, but you haven't tried it in the field. And then when you do the field trials, you say, oh, but you can't see anything because there's so much noise compared to the signal. So we're sort of falling between two chairs there. But we have to soldier on and keep getting as much data as we can. Thank you very much. I haven't measured electrical conductivity this year. I would expect one of the interesting things I'd like to look at is comparing the, as I said, the above surface rotary tilling the biochar into the top surface compared to inverse ploughing, because I think what we've seen today and is like, for example, this question about weathering and what that does to absorption. One thing I'd like to pose to you all is try testing invert ploughing biochar into a lower layer and see whether keeping it there for that first season weathers it to a certain extent, and how does that affect it when you bring it back up to the surface. So I will probably test for EC next year.